Welcome to Try with Nate Dern, a podcast where I talk to people about something they're trying to do and then add in a few audio footnotes that go deeper into the topic at hand. Today's guest is John Gabris, a hilarious comedian and podcaster. Gabris is one of my favorite people to listen to or watch perform. If you're not familiar with Gabris, just picture a friendly bear wearing sunglasses and floral print beachwear, smoking a joint while he strikes up a conversation that is the exact intersection of the Venn diagrams of meathead and nerd. Today's topic, and the thing that Gabris is trying to do, is read more.
Hey, Gabris, thanks for talking with me.
Of course, Dern. I'm always excited to talk to you. You know this. Now, you know this, man. Come on. Don't act like you don't. I don't know why.
this is a huge honor. You're kind of a podcast expert. You want to mention some of the podcasts that you got going on right now?
I'm an expert in the Malcolm Gladwell pseudoscience way. I'm uninformed, but I'm probably at 10,000 hours now, unfortunately. Not the Malcolm Gladwell that's on the Epstein flight logs, just the Malcolm Gladwell that wrote that wrote the Outliers. But my normal podcast, which Dern has been on, is High and Mighty. So if you're a fan of just Dern and not me, listen to this. I recommend check out that Dern episode. And it's
start with that one. That can be your entry.
Yeah. It's in a wheelhouse of a very good, very fun conversation on, which is what All High and Mighty is. I have a podcast called Action Boys, which is a Patreon podcast, but there are some free episodes out there. You can seek those out wherever, where we talk about classic action movies for longer than the runtime of the movies. Then I have the Gino Lombardo show, which is currently airing in its second season right now, which is a more scripted sort of, narrative podcast that's improvised, and that's out now, promo code Gino on Stitcher Premium. And then Raised by TV, I have a shit ton of episodes of with Lauren Lapkus, but we're not making any new ones, but those are out there, and it's about nostalgia TV, so it's not, you know, that's not too dated.
So that nostalgia is going to keep, that's staying fresh as ever. You can listen to any of those.
One thing that never gets stale is nostalgia.
Man, we're starting off deep right away. I like this that gem.
Save that for our marketing when we launch our tech marketing company, dude.
Hey, the one thing that never goes stale is nostalgia. I'm John Gabris, and this is Nate Dern, and here's our TED Talk.
Yeah, I mean, we look like two guys that would be in a room. Yeah, like slight, like the brains and brawn of a tech world. Like, you know, not too brawn, not too brains, but that's.
But just kind of write those Venn diagrams. Well, you mentioned Malcolm Gladwell and his 10,000 hours theory, which is a good segue into today's topic. So this is a podcast where we talk to people about something they're trying to do. And I kind of shoehorned this on to you where I noticed you like tweeted or maybe you replied to someone where you mentioned that you were trying to read more. So I was like, hey, John Gamrish, you want to come on this podcast and talk about trying to read more?
Yeah. Well, this podcast, I could be a guest on maybe 40 times because, as you know about me, I'm trying to do a lot of things always. I'm always trying to new things. I'm a jack of all trades. Maybe it's arguably because I'm lazy and easily distracted, but I am a font of wasted potential. So I like to do I'm a dabbler. So, but one thing that really hit recently is, and I've been living in LA now for coming on 8 years, and I used to read a lot as a child, and then, you know, not so much as a college kid, and then way more as a 20-something living in New York City. I read on the train all the time. And now at the same time that I moved to LA, where I lost public transit, like technology, we're talking 2012, like took off too. Even more so, I was already off, but like it's taken off. And I have just found like I probably read more books in the last year I was in New York than I have since moving to LA. And that's
since moving upsetting. To LA, total.
Total. Yeah. Yeah. In eight years, I've probably read, you know, 20 to 30 books. And previously it was, you know, maybe 40, I'll say what at most, but previously it was, you know, around 50 a year, like
right.
Something that was like, you know, around 40 to 50 a year when it felt good.
That's a respectable number. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not like a real reader, but I was a pastime by reading, I like books. I love. So like, and now that's just not part of it anymore. And there's something, and maybe it's because I'm almost 40, that I just and I'm a little older than a lot of people, than you know half the people. I equate with intelligence, and it being well read, I equate with intelligence. Even if you like forget most of the stuff in the book, if something hits you and sticks in your bones, and some thematic thing, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, whatever, just something sticks in your bones. It's just like having a bunch of that stuck in your bones is good for your bones, is what I'm saying.
I think so. I think it's good for your bones. It's good for your body bones, good for your brain bones. One of my first impressions of you was, like you said, we both used to live in New York. I live there still, but like a decade ago, I was taking classes at the UCB Theater, and I was looking up to you as a performer there. You were a very funny improv comedian and sketch performer and storytelling performer. And one of my indie improv teams, which is a thing that used to happen, maybe it still does, we hired you as a coach. And I think before you coached me, I just thought of you as this like very funny, boisterous, like I knew from some of your storytelling that you had done rugby and had been kind of a jock, that sort of thing.
I was
a bit of a meathead. And then having you as a coach, I realized like, oh shit, this guy reads too. And not only that, you read like fantasy and sci-fi and struck me as very well read. So that was one of my formative impressions of you, of like this combo meathead reader, which I thought was so interesting. And then it made sense seeing your improv because you did have so many references that you could pull from, and you could do genres very easily, which is very useful in improv if you need to like map on like, oh, these meathead football players are on like a quest or something. It's helpful to have those references to draw from.
Yeah, you're just like, pitch what my brain is on. A meathead on a quest of like, I have to gain more strength in the bench press. yes, with the creatine from Lower GNC.
So good. Writes itself.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you say that, because a lot of the people I always looked up to as like, on the intellectual, like a lot of the people I've always looked up to since being a boy and then a young man have always been like physical freaks, or going solely for men, as physical freaks of like, this guy is huge, he's so strong, he does these weird things, or people who are like, this guy seems to have seen every movie and read every book. People like Curtis Gwynn, like as I got older, like these sort of like the raconteur type person where it's like, I think they're maybe, they come across as dumb alcoholics, but in reality they're like, and I don't mean that for Curtis, but I mean that for like the type of person I idolize.
Yes. Yes.
But like Curtis is one of those people who like, you know, was like a normal regular dude who happened to be a fucking genius and love every movie and like read all these books. Like just someone, when you activate that on someone, you just like look up to them in some way. And I've always liked that my, you know, this book, the John Gaber's book, has a goofy ass cover. So being it like, I like being able to I also like the surprise of like, believe it or not, like what you said, like I enjoy, like if I'm being 100% honest, I enjoy that level on a narcissistic way that people are often surprised how smart I am. Like do I enjoy it, or am I not really that smart, but it's surprisingly enough that I get a hit off of it. And that's the way I'm going to get that. You know what I mean? Like someone's not going to be like, Gabrus is a genius. Gabrus is surprisingly a genius. That's right. I just need that modifier to get in there.
Just that little bit.
I thought he would be a fucking moron. It's like,
He'd be an illiterate, but he's read a book.
Yeah, that's all I need. And then people are talking about me like, oh, he's an intelligent guy.
How do you teach someone how to read? That magical thing that we all take for granted, that Stephen King describes as a literal form of time travel, where thoughts and words that someone came up with in the past are suddenly blasted into your mind in whatever present moment you're reading them. I do not know how to teach someone to read, which is a problem for many reasons, but one is that I was briefly a middle school English language arts teacher for Teach for America. That was the first time I ever really thought about the idea of reading levels. Until computers came along, reading levels were primarily assessed through word frequency lists, meaning that the more frequently a word appears, the easier it is to understand, most likely, whereas less common words are more difficult. Education organizations assign grade levels to different words. For example, the Common Core designates the word furious as being at the third grade level, while the word fortuitous is at the 12th grade level. A
A 2017 study found that one out of every six adults in the U.S. is below a fourth grade reading level, meaning that 36 million people would struggle to, for example, read a job application, understand basic written instructions, or comprehend a news article on the internet. Reflecting on my conversation with Gabrus, I realize how fortuitous it is that we're both privileged enough to be in a position where we wish we could read more, and how furious it makes me that our country doesn't do a better job closing the literacy gap. I bring this up because, you know, I just made a joke where I called Gabrus an illiterate, and I just wanted to flag that I'm not trying to make light of what is really an important issue. Okay, back to the conversation.
Growing up, what do you remember what the first books that you read where you're like, oh, maybe reading isn't dumb. Maybe I kind of like reading. Do you remember getting into like for me, I remember these Brian Jacques Redwall books where it's these little forest creatures that get into these like Knights of the Round Table type adventures. And I remember thinking like, oh, wait, I like chapter books. And then that was kind of my like gateway into that.
I happened to learn to read very early. Like something my dad just was like, my parents were like 22, 21 when they had me. So my dad was just like reading to me and showing me books and like all this stuff when I was a kid, and I could roll into kindergarten being able to read. Like, I don't need picture books. Like it needs to be like a kid's book. But I go so fast. By like fifth and sixth grade, I started getting a D&D. My reading level was like, I could just read whatever I wanted to read. That wasn't like something dense. Like, you know what I mean? Right. I could read almost any book written for kids any age. Like we didn't have Harry Potter at that time, but I was like, I got my hands on a fantasy novel and I devoured it because it was like D&D, but I didn't have to wait to like be with my friends and I'm just in my head. And then when I went to go play D&D, I had like all these ideas for new characters and stuff, and I was just like, oh, read it. And then I just started devouring fantasy, and I the last couple of years have re-listened to all those book series, because it's like a 20 something book series, the Legend of Drizzt by R.A. Salvatore. I just re-listened to them in the last like few years, all of them, all 24 novels again. It was very, very funny. But I will say my main takeaway, I've listened to them all back to back, is I was able to read them when I was 12.
so maybe there's a reason there.
And I like listening to it now. I'm like, this is so like, and I'm like, listening. I'm like, well, that's obviously, even though the books are completely out of my mind, I don't remember storyline. I'm so ahead of it because I just know how the scaffolding, how the sausage is made, just in general. And it's like, this character is definitely the bad guy. Like, and it's just funny re-listening to it now. I'm like, these things were so formidable for me, and I still really gotten a lot of enjoyment out of them. And it was oddly like trying to drop in on your own memory. Like I was like listening to a book, all of a sudden I'm like, Belwar Disengulp. And they're like, that's when they ran into the Sphere of Nephilim. And I'm like, it's Belwar Disengulp. That's the name. It's triggered. And it's like, they say it. And I'm like, why do I have those five adjectives burned into my head for 25 years? Those five syllables.
They're never going away.
Yeah, they're never going away. And there was, and that really kicked it off for me. And then the real solidifier of the summer in between fifth and sixth grade, I moved to a new house, a new school. Okay. And so I didn't have that many friends. And like at that age, your mom had to, like, I had neighborhood friends and I lost all my neighborhood friends, but I also had this big bedroom, and that was the big selling point because I didn't want to move. My parents like, you're gonna have the old master bedroom that's in the basement in the downstairs, that's yours. And all that was in that room when we got there was a non-jacketed copy of The Stand. Like,
what?
And it was the biggest book I had ever seen, and because it had no jacket, it was just tan, and it said,
"Holy shit,
The Stand, Stephen King." And it was on the shelf in my closet. This is a summer in between fifth and sixth grade. The thing is like 8 inches thick or something like that. I don't know inches. Ask my wife. I fucking was like, "This is what I'm doing this summer," and I read The Stand in a summer, and it's Stephen King, so it's very readable. But it is like, it's just over 1,000 pages. And I never read anything like that in my life. But I kept saying to myself, like, I had read some other Stephen King and liked it. I had read, you know, tens of thousands of pages about one character in a fantasy novels.
Right.
And when I did that, I closed the book. I went to sixth grade and like, you know, read Where the Red Fern Grows. Yeah. No fucking problem. Yeah, I ride my bike home from school. like The Stand, like it just broke me open where I was like, oh, this is so, and not even the material of the book, just like the meta of like, it was like finishing a fucking marathon in my head, where it's like, well, now 5 miles is just like, that's a, like, who cares? That's a run. Like, that's not a big deal.
Right. Right.
And it
right.
just felt, it just changed my brain in a way where I was like, no book seemed crazy anymore. No, you know, no book seemed like too much. So when right, teachers right. in school would be like, oh, this is the book, kids would be like, no, I'd be like, oh, it's only 141 pages. Like, I recently listened to Of Mice and Men, Gary Sinise narrated, highly recommend.
Oh.
And totally forgot that it was a short book. I'm like, of course, right, that's right. why you read it. It was shorter than like some Action Boys episodes, the audiobook, you know what I mean? And I was just like, oh, that was fucking great. And again, dropping into my old memory, just like remembering like, oh, the Curly's glove, like all this shit. And it's like,
yeah.
Audiobooks were my way back in living out here, but now I still think I need to be able to read too, because the fact that my brain, it's difficult to do, means that I need to fix
it. It's a skill that you lose, that you atrophy, that I think, talking about just circumstances like living in New York and those commuting on the subway, or just something about it in New York, I find myself reading more or listening to audiobooks. And then in LA, it just happened less, because I lived in LA for a couple of years too. And I use this app called Goodreads. Have you heard of this? You can like log the books you read.
Yeah.
I kind of have mixed opinions about making it into this social media thing, but then you can have like a challenge of how many books you want to read in a year and see what your friends are recommending. Yeah.
I'm going through something similar with Letterboxd currently. I signed up. And I'm like, do I want to keep track of the movies I watched? Like, it's such a thing that I like to do, but it's like, it could be fun for me to keep track of and be able to look back and be like, oh, I watched 40 Harrison Ford movies or whatever, you know?
Yeah, which I think is how they sell you to get into it. But then they're using all the same like gamifying like casino tricks that all the other social media places are using. Like, oh, I have a notification from George Saunders. What? And then it's just because I follow him. It,
like, guess what? Lincoln, he's in the Bardo, baby. No.
And now, since the topic is reading, here's a brief interlude from someone who might know just a bit more about reading and writing than we do. He's a short story writer, novelist, and recipient of the MacArthur Genius Grant. Here's a clip from George Saunders in an interview with PBS NewsHour from 2017.
It's kind of strange. My artistic approach is that you're supposed to be a little baffled as you're writing.
The writer?
Yes. The holiest state is to be a little confused about what you're doing, and you're guiding by the energy that the story is actually giving you as you revise. That's kind of tricky, because it means you have to abandon your ideas about organization or thematics and really submit to the story, just as if it was a friend kind of trying to convince you of something. So if you do that, sometimes it takes you, it asks you to do really crazy things. And for me, that's the thrill of it, is to say, okay, I'll try it, and then hope that it will result in some kind of new mode of beauty.
And at some point, you're no longer confused by what you're doing? Never stops.
Still confused, because hopefully the book is doing things that you didn't consciously plan.
So at the core of this is this.
Yeah, so I'm trying to read more now, and that's a weird thing, because it's about stopping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the first time I have to get motivated to stop, whatever that means. Like, it's like I have to take out a book and like sit. And now I'm like a child and I'm at home. So there's like, I'm never on a plane. I'm never like, oh, I'll pop open my book here. So now I have to like make time at home, where my PlayStation, my marijuana, my wife, my dog, where all these fun things exist. And now I have to be like, well, I better sit down and finish Sapiens, which I'm on like month three of reading now.
That's a great book. Do you find that is one of the reasons why you can't read, do you find like, oh, I should be doing something else more productive, which sounds so crazy, but I sometimes will find like, if I sit down to read, I'm like, oh, I should be working on that pilot pitch or something. Like,
well, that's
even
the,
though I, yeah.
That's the thing. And I'm with you, but I won't do that either. That's the
Me
thing. That's where I'm at now. Like, I had to make this resolve. I had to become resolved to just play video games, because I can't be like, don't play video games, it's a waste of time, you have to get work done. Then I would sit over here and not, I'm referring to over here at this computer that I'm talking to you on, and not work.
Right.
And then 2 hours would pass and I'd be like, I haven't done anything except like maybe read 4 articles about white supremacy and law enforcement, or, you know, domestic terrorism and the rise of the far right. And I'm like, huh. What the fuck? I might as well just play video games then.
Right.
So then I started doing that. And now I'm like, oh, okay. Now if we're like just indulging myself, I'm not getting any less work done playing 2 hours of video games. I'm like, well, now maybe I could read for an hour in the morning. Maybe
right.
So I've been doing Sunday morning reading, but now I'm trying to get it to be every morning with my coffee before I sit here and start shooting off emails and getting stressed about something to read or look at or whatever. I need to do physical distancing. Look, because I'm going to give you a little tour of the office, which you've been in, but it's gotten up. Yeah. So here's a bunch of to read books.
I see a big pile. There's a big pile of to read books.
There's a bunch on top of my bookcase there.
Bookcase covered in books on top too.
But so you know the couch. Now I don't have guests. So this is now, that's my sort of, I try to get away from my computer. I have to leave my phone. I mean, I'm at the point now where I have to put my phone in another room to watch a movie, something that is like one of my favorite things to do and arguably a little passive. And I still can't do it. If my phone's in my hand, I'll get distracted. And it's upsetting me that like my phone has me beat. So now I have to like move all this shit over here, go over there. I go to the beach and leave my phone in the car just to read for like an hour. And then I do sometimes find myself going to get my phone.
Right. But that physical spacing actually works though. Either having like the space in your house, that's kind of a ritual, like, okay, this is where I read, or going to the beach, like it's reading time, leaving the phone back.
Right. A friend of mine got a timed lock and a little cabinet that he can fit his laptop. He can fit his laptop and his phone in, and he'll do that for like when he needs to like lock down and watch a movie, or wants to write freehand and not be distracted by anything, or to read or to exercise. Like it forces him. And I was like,
I can't believe it's come to that, but that's such a good idea.
Yeah. And he's like, you said it for 1 hour, and I just know I can't touch my shit for an hour. And he's like, of course you could cut it, whatever, you know, shit hits the fan, right. But it's like mostly about like, you can wait an hour. Like you really, if you can't, like that's where I get weird, is when I'm like, oh, my phone. I think about my phone when I don't have it, where I'm like, oh, I would love to look up this actor's name on IMDb right now. It's like, no, just watch the movie. You did it like this for 28 years of your life. Like,
right.
You could do it still. Yeah.
Sometimes I'll find like reading a book. I'll look up a word, like a vocabulary word, where I'm like, oh, I think I know what that means, but let me check. And then all of a sudden I'll just kind of, it feels almost like I was drugged, where I come to and I've got my phone like on top of a page, like within my book, and I'm just staring at my phone. And then I kind of look around like, wait, what happened? I wasn't looking at my phone. I was reading. How'd this happen? And then I feel very bad about myself.
Dude, I talk about this shit all the time. It's like, I'll go away for a weekend with Tiff, and it's like, all right, I'm not looking at my phone. I'm just going to fucking hang out by the fire, just chill, read. I have my notebook. And then it's like, oh, shit. Let me just check the Bank of America statement, or let me just something actually important.
Right. I was supposed to do that thing. And then,
90 minutes disappear.
Yeah.
And you're like, what? I never even looked up the weather. I've just been on Instagram now. It's like, I'm like, right. You just shoot yourself like instantly in the foot.
Attention span is the term used to describe the amount of time we can stay focused on a task before becoming distracted. Psychologists distinguish between, quote, transient attention, meaning a short-term response to a stimulus that temporarily distracts us, like a dog barking or seeing something shiny out of the corner of your eye, or yes, getting a phone notification, versus selective sustained attention, or otherwise known as focused attention, which is how long we actively choose to keep paying attention to the same task, such as reading a book or watching a movie or playing a video game. A viral study from 2015 claimed that the average human attention span had been reduced to a mere 8 seconds, but this study has been widely disputed in terms of what it was even trying to say and its methodology, et cetera, et cetera. An alternate interpretation is that we're surrounded by more compelling stimuli than we ever have been in the past. So when you get that little notification on your phone with the bright color and sound and upticking numbers and promise of an infinite array of video and image and text out there to titillate you, well, it's just way more compelling than some novel that a MacArthur Genius Grant worked on for years and years and years, right? Right, guys? Okay, before I lose your attention anymore, let's get back to the end of my conversation with John Gabris.
Do you, when you say you go read, are you actually looking at a physical book? Do you also do Kindle? And you were kind of saying that you've done some audiobooks, but when you say you're trying to read more, you mean like physically holding a book and reading it?
Yes. I'm not a real Kindle guy. I've never been. I don't mind. Like, I like a book.
Yeah.
If I'm being 100% honest with myself, which I guess I'm trying to do on this podcast, I like the throwbackness of like, I'm the guy who, if I see someone reading a book that I've read and I liked it and they're like, they're not closed off in that moment, I'll say like, oh, I fucking love Sapiens.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah.
And I miss that. And that kind of goes away with the Kindle. And I think that's part of why reading is fun in New York. Cause it's like, it's just like, it's like a intellectual away message for while you're on the train. Right.
Right.
It's like, you're like, yep. Dances with Dragons or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I'm reading. Yeah. And there's something fun about that. And then especially in New York in the early and mid 2000s, you know, you get on the train, 20 people are just looking at books. No one's playing video games. No one has all this shit. So it's like, you get on, you're like, well, I should get a book. And this is like before even like the proliferation of headphones and of iPods carrying so much music, MP3 players. And then when you had that, then you were like, in a dream world, you're like, I get on the F train, I put on fucking whatever music I want and read whatever book I want.
That's pretty great.
And then podcasts hit and you're like, well, now I don't have to read. I can just listen to my friends talk about topics that I know about. It's like, this is weird.
Yeah, I feel like I briefly got into podcasts when that first happened. And then I went back to books, but now I'm working from home this past year and I don't commute. I also, the last couple of years I've had a job when I was still commuting, you know, pre-pandemic, I would bike sometimes. And then I would, sometimes I would just feel like I had too much work to do. So I'd be like, okay, I'm going to get work done
fire off emails on the ride and then do some drafts or whatever.
Yeah. And like, and that also kind of felt like the type of thing where I'm like, did I really get 45 minutes or an hour's work done? Or could I have just read a book and would that have been better for my brain?
Well, that's now you're getting to the question I have. We were talking about like, do you feel like you have other work to do? Blah, blah. Here's my question. You think if you read, just using that one train ride as an example, let's extrapolate that out to like routine. Do you think if you read for that 45 minutes every time instead of answering emails, you end up like being sharper and that break for your brain allows you to trim 45 minutes off of your daily amount of work? Doing the sauna is supposed to like help you with like lifelong longevity. But what if you found out 20 minutes in the sauna only adds 19 minutes to your life? right? And it's like, you're just losing on the whole long run. It's like, there's something about reading the book where it's like maybe taking a half hour from work every day might, you know, at 5 days a week might actually add 2.5 hours of more like poignant, like more important work getting done because you had that moment for your half hour for your brain to walk through a different world. And because I believe in that like fucking stimulus shit for creativity. Yeah. And again, being 100% honest with myself, I don't know if I believe in it as a crutch so that I could use reading, watching movies, playing video games, watching TV as inspiration for never doing anything. There is like Patton Oswalt had a book. Here I am, called Silver Screen Fiend, I think it's called.
Oh, okay.
And it was really cool. And it was about his addiction to going to movies when he first moved to California, to Los Angeles, and how it fucked up his career. He would like had a Mad TV writing job and would like leave early to go see movies that because he's like, I have to see this movie that I'd never seen before because it's only playing here and in 70mm. And like, he got like, and it's a very interesting read because it is for us guys like you and I who get easily obsessed or want to like learn and figure out ways to hack yourself, be better. And
yeah,
it was very interesting of like the dark side of like consumption as creativity.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yeah. I have to read that.
And it's a quick, easy read. One of the books I've read since I moved here.
it's like Of Mice and Men.
Yeah.
It's the 5K of reads.
It's like Of Mice and Men. What a weird pull quote. People are like, huh? And that's like dot, dot, dot. In that it's short.
It's like Of Mice and Men.
From literary journalism forever.
In that it is shorter than Stephen King's The Stand, it is like Of Mice and Men. A book review by a person who has read 3 books.
Yeah, including the one he's reviewing.
That I am reviewing right now. Oh, man. But going back to your theory, I think you're right. And I might just be justifying it too, but I think that the overall gains for you being sharper and then fresher when you do have to go do those emails, because I think sometimes work, especially like replying to email type bullshit work like that, I think it is like a liquid that it just fills the amount of time that you'll allow it to. So you can take 3 hours doing that. Or if you read for an hour, then you can do it in 2 hours or maybe even more efficient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been rolling exercise into that too. Cause sometimes I'll be like, oh, no, I got to get work done. And that's really an excuse not to exercise. But then when you exercise and you're like, oh, now I want to work, you know what I mean? Like there's like it's like that brain chemistry, mental health shit that you're learning more and more about as you get older and as we as a society learn more. And it's like, I feel like reading a book might be taking a walk. I mean, taking a walk is taking a walk for the brain, but like right. reading a book might be another way to take a walk for the brain.
Yeah. And like you said, just how rare it is to do nothing and to put the phone away, put the laptop in the timed lockbox. I think that's great. What else have you found is successful for helping you to read?
I find for me, the answer is make time. Making time is the answer I need for everything. I'm going to just show you something that I'm a little embarrassed about, but I've now talked about.
Oh, nice. All right. So this is like a color-coded spreadsheet of a calendar or your weekly schedule?
Yeah, my weekly schedule of where I had to make a schedule for myself to stick to so that other people asking me to do things didn't mess up my schedule. Now, you see, you asked me to do, and you're one of the first people since my paradigm came out. Monday and Tuesdays is when I'm guesting on podcasts.
Amazing.
And so, like, you hit me up, and I was like, if you can do this day, I'm in. And I was like, hell yeah. So keeping the system allows me to, allegedly, I'm supposed to read for a half hour as part of waking up. I'm supposed That's to read awesome. While I drink coffee. And it frequently ends up being a bunch of articles because I'm like, truly obsessed with the rise of domestic terrorism via like right-wing factions right. and stuff. Like it's something I'm reading like all these writers on that, but now I've also been ordering books about that subject and other books that people recommend to me. And like,
Oh, cool. Oh,
I like fantasy novels. Someone's like, oh, you got to read Kings of the Wild. I'm like, got it, order it. And now I just, and that's what that tweet that you saw was in reference to. Someone was like, anyone else keep ordering books, but haven't read one. I'm like, I'm literally going to be fucking craned out of here. Like what's eating Gilbert Grape's mom. If we don't figure out the fucking, like if I don't start reading some of these books and getting them into storage or giving them to friends.
Going back to Stephen King, it sounds like one of the things that helps is having the routine, having the place where you do it in Stephen King's book on writing.
Great book.
Love that book. And he talks a lot about like one of the best things you can do to be a better writer or to go from being like a competent writer to a good writer is just to read more and kind of treating it like it's your job almost. And so I see if you want to be a writer, like treating the reading part as a part of your job. And so I think your schedule is a really good idea of like, you're treating it like that's your job. Like reading is a part of the weekly thing that you can have in your routine to make you better at what you do and giving it that level of seriousness.
Right. It's almost like, think about like that Mark Wahlberg thing that went viral where he was like, wake up at 3, protein shake, golf, shower, lift weights, whatever. Like if you could design that for yourself, you probably, you meaning Nate Dern, not the proverbial you and me in this case, you'd probably put read on there. You're like, oh, right. I have unlimited time. Like, oh, I have an hour uninterrupted reading every day. Like while I listen to classical. If you could like, just dream out your fucking like life where you're like, yeah, 1 hour of listening to reading a book outside while I feel the breeze every day. It's like, right, that right. would be good for you. Right. Like you could see if you were like going on vacation where you blocked out all your hours and you were like, I get to do 2 hours of reading with a coffee in the morning while it gets slightly warmer. And you're like, oh fuck. Yeah. That sounds great. But that is something we could technically do now. Yeah.
In the abstract, it's like, oh, it's so nice if I could design my life like that. But it's like,
you can just wake up a half hour earlier. You could just like, you know, me, I don't even have, like, I could foreseeably do that every day. And I don't. And that's what's bothering me now is that I have all these things that I want to get done. And now I'm sort of doing none instead. So if I'm like, I'm allowing myself, if I like pick up a book and start reading, it's like, if you do this all day today, that's like a success.
That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it feels like I like at this point, like any day like that you end where if you this was a good day versus a bad day, it's just trying to get as many of those good days in a row.
Right.
It's like aim
right.
low. keep the bar low, dude.
For listeners out there who are maybe they haven't read in a while, they kind of want to spark the magic again. Could I put you on the spot in any books that you would recommend that even in the last year or even few years that you think would be a good book for someone to be like, oh, this might get you excited about reading. One that I'll recommend to start. Yeah. I think you and I have talked about him before, but Kurt Vonnegut was another one of those early authors that I just got so excited about where I was like, oh my gosh, wait, I didn't know that reading was allowed to be weird. Like I thought that it just had to be like serious and stuffy and A Tale of Two Cities, all the stuff that I'd been assigned in English class. And then kind of reading this one on the, I think in like 10th grade, I read Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut and got so excited that reading can be weird and people can just write whatever they want.
I found Vonnegut after college.
And I,
when I was commuting in on the Long Island Railroad, I have such a distinct memory of plowing through those Vonnegut books that all had the similar cover with like, the V design. Like I read like eight in like one full year of being a PA at VH1. That's great.
Amazing.
He activates because was that funny?
Right.
Is that just funny? Yeah. And then you're like, holy shit. Yeah, that was funny.
Wait a second. I think he's being funny now. Yeah.
So cool. I'll give two different kinds of books that I've really enjoyed recently. One book, and this is I've read this a long time ago, but if you're curious, if you like fantasy, I'll always recommend The Blade Itself. It's a trilogy.
I haven't read that.
It's Joe Abercrombie. It's a trilogy. He wrote these three books that are like in a fantasy world, but it's very much like there's barely any magic. No one believes in it. It's treated like quackery. It's very funny. It's R-rated, which is like weird for fantasy to read fantasy where people curse and kill and have trouble with the idea of murder and stuff. And the main character is just so fucking awesome. And they build this world out and it's just, and Abercrombie, shout him out, is very funny. And the characters are very rich and real and different from each other and different from other fantasy archetypes. So it's very enjoyable that way.
Cool.
It fucking rules. And then the other book that I really enjoyed recently that's completely a swing in the other direction, but in my also under my file under things I love, The Big Goodbye. It's historical. It's about the making of Chinatown from the perspective of Polanski, Robert Towne, and Robert Evans. So it's very, and Jack Nicholson. So it kind of talks about all these huge mega people at the peak of their time coming together to make this movie that people consider, a gem of modern cinema. So and if you like movie making and you want to just hear about the powerful people that are all involved in this and how fucking weird Robert Towne is and like how maybe he is not as deserving as to be the screenwriting guru that he like a lot. It makes you sympathetic for Polanski briefly and then not again. Like he's got such like it gets you all over the place, but it's a very, very enjoyable time capsule. It was a good read. For sure.
Oh, those both sound great. I'll check them out.
For sure. And both very easy reads.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Gabrus, I feel like I could talk to you about books all night, but I'll let you go so you can get some reading done, get back to the schedule. But
yes, please let me. Also, feel free to text me about books. Like we don't even have to do podcasts. I mean, it doesn't count if we don't record it. But
yeah, exactly. Wait, we can just talk about books as friends?
Yeah, we could just say instead of like, I really enjoy talking to you on my podcast. It's like, why don't we just talk?
Okay, book fans, that is the episode. My thanks again to John Gabrus for taking the time to talk to me. Please listen to one of Gabrus's many hilarious podcasts. I'd suggest starting with High and Mighty, maybe the one that I'm on. I don't know. Give it a search. And thanks to all of you for listening at home. Gabrus has inspired me to try to read more, so if you have any book recommendations, please let me know. I'd love to hear them. And wow, everybody, this is the final episode of 2020. Thank you to everyone for listening. Thank you for supporting the podcast. All of the reviews are so kind, and it really means a lot to me. Thank you for leaving them. I really appreciate it. The Try with Nate Dern podcast will be back in 2020. Oh, let's try that again. The Try with Nate Dern podcast will be back in 2021 with more episodes. Oh, wait, I forgot the thing I always say at the end. Whatever it is you're trying to do, big or small, I hope you keep on trying. Yeah, okay, that's it. I mean it. All right. Bye, everybody.